Well, I returned from a trip to Israel. It was 2.5 weeks. It was a pastoral program in which a group of 20 pastors from, incidentally, the Midwestern states were invited to go on a trip to the Holy Land. So why would I go on this trip if I'm from California? Well, I knew the guy who was leading the trip, and I used to be from Montana, so that counted. And I was able to join this group of pastors in which we had a couple days of orientation at Princeton Seminary and then flew over through Frankfurt to Tel Aviv and spent a week in the region of Galilee and then a week down in Jerusalem and varying trips that were emanating from those two different places. We would have morning excursions, afternoon rest time and prayer and study, and evening discussion groups. And it was a trip designed for pastors based on a foundation from a guy who had gone to the Holy Land, had an amazing experience, and wanted pastors to experience that as well. And the whole point of it was to give pastors an exposure to the Holy Land, the place in which the Bible was written, to understand it more deeply, to also have a time of restoration. A lot of times these Israel trips tend to be power-packed sightseeing tours for 2 weeks. You come back and you can't even function for another week or so. It was intended to be a time of renewal as well as education. And the trip was designed into two different parts, a time up in Galilee and a time in Jerusalem. And the design of this trip is no accident. It was exactly in line with what we read about the followers of Jesus, in which they heard from him, they were with him, they walked with him, they saw him do miracles. It was perfectly in line with the timeline we find within the Gospels. When Jesus makes his appearance on the scene, one of the first places he goes to is a town called Capernaum. He walked from Nazareth in the high places, walked through these huge cavernous valleys down to a beautiful sea. It reminds me a lot of Flathead Lake, actually, incidentally, in Montana. And a long, beautiful lake has kind of a Mediterranean feel to it. And there Jesus called his first disciples, made his home base in a little town called Capernaum, where Peter lived, and began participating in missionary journeys throughout the Galilean countryside. And all four Gospels have this ministry to the surrounding region happening in Galilee. And it takes up a good half of each Gospel, right? 3 years, Jesus making various trips from Galilee to regions in that area. And then the second half of the Gospels condense Jesus' timeline into a period of 1 to 2 weeks. His last 2 weeks, this trip to Jerusalem and his week in Jerusalem. And it was very intense. And, of course, the last week, which we have many different chapters of the New Testament written about, this very intense full week, kind of mirrored our own staying in Jerusalem for a week. They wanted us to kind of experience the rhythms of what the disciples felt in following Jesus. Our theme for the trip was following Jesus on the way. On the way is a theme and a word phrase that you see a lot in the Gospels. And on the way to Caesarea Philippi, and on the way to the Jordan, and on the way to Jerusalem. Jesus said this, or Jesus did this. And the rhythms were great. In the first week, we did a number of morning excursions that went out to places that Jesus himself had visited. And he did it on foot, maybe on horseback once in a while, but mostly he walked to various places. Probably made some return trips to Nazareth where he was born and raised. He made a trip up to Caesarea Philippi, which is now called Banias. A good half an hour, 45 minutes by bus. You can imagine what it would take to walk that distance. It was there that Peter made his confession that Jesus was the Messiah. He took a boat ride, which we did as well, across the Sea of Galilee to the region of the Gadarenes, where he got off the boat and met the demon-possessed man and cast those out, restored him to his frame of mind, and then the people said, you could leave us now because this really freaks us out. And you just saw the region and the countryside in which he worked with. And the trip in that part of that section of the trip was very relaxing for us. It was interesting for our group leader to notice this group of pastors show up at the retreat center we had on the Sea of Galilee, and he just watched us all decompress. We all, if you're a pastor, you're a leader of a church, you're always kind of wired to be moving fast and on the go, always thinking about things. And we didn't have any responsibilities. We didn't have to plan anything. And we all kind of just kind of relaxed. We had these beautiful morning excursions in which the Bible was read for us. These various texts came alive in the midst of the places in which we were visiting. And we got to come back and to rest on a patio overlooking the Sea of Galilee. In many ways, that mirrored what Jesus had done for those 3 years. He had gone on various day trips, walking to places throughout the region of Galilee. These walks would have been leisurely. They would have food along the way, rest in the midst of the heat. It was hot, hotter than I thought. Someone said, like a desert. Yeah, it's a desert. The trees there you see that are green have been planted and watered. They don't naturally grow there. And you can imagine having to stop underneath a shade in an oasis and to relax. And you notice many times throughout the gospel of Jesus himself, after a hard day's work of working with the people, maybe performing some healings, maybe doing some teachings, he always grabbed his disciples and took them away, didn't he? He says, here, let's go away to a quiet place to pray, right? And Jesus himself, early in the morning, he would get up and go to a quiet place to pray. And his disciples, of course, at times thought, you're losing some kind of leadership capital here. We have some momentum going. And all these people are asking for you. And he would say, let's get in the boat. We're going to go to the other side. Leave the crowd behind. And what that kind of part of the trip meant for us was to understand that part of the rhythms of what it means to follow Jesus Christ is intentional and necessary times of rest, intentional and necessary times of prayer, and intentional and necessary times of getting away from all of the hubbub. In terms of worldly success, Jesus was having a tremendously successful ministry in Galilee. There were large crowds following him wherever he went. In fact, at one point, he gets into a boat. The crowd wants him. He goes to a quiet place to pray, but the entire crowd ran along the seashore and met him to where he landed, forcing him to pay attention to him. Ministry was going well. Ministry was happening, but he had to pull them away and get them to rest, to get them to recharge. And this week was exactly what was intended for us as pastors. And the same thing would apply to you as well. For those of you who are always on the go, who tend to be the types that are wired to get things done and to move at 100 miles an hour, there are times when you have to pull away. And to get some rest, some time to pray, in which you are doing business with God on your own. Time to relax. How's that for a command from the Lord, huh? To just let things go for a little while. The crowds will take care of themselves. The success of all that's happening around you will be attended to in short time. I believe Jesus was trying to embed within the lives of his disciples a rhythm of rest, a rhythm of recharging, a rhythm of doing business with God by ourselves and not just watching all of the exciting things unfold. He wanted disciples to participate in that and to rest. And the second part of our trip then, after that rest, was a trip into Jerusalem, and it's an entirely different feel. In Galilee, when I show you the slides, there's very few towns. There's one big city on the side of the hill called Tiberias, little outcroppings. Nothing is built there. And this would be great development property if they ever opened it up, right? That's not going to happen. And it was just amazingly reclusive. The time of Jesus, those cities weren't big as well. They tend to be up in the hill, Caesarea Philippi, 45 minutes away, a great Roman town. Sepphoris on the hill the other way next to Nazareth, number of, you know, about 30, 1,000 people living on top of that hill. Nazareth, where Jesus was born, had about 500. Very small, quiet, relaxing space. I can imagine it being very similar to what it was back then. Then we came into Jerusalem, and everything changes. This is the place where hustle and bustle are happening time and time again. It's a huge city. It's one of the world's cities. There are so many different kinds of people, so many different people with different devotions to their faith. Obviously, we stayed in a place called the Notre Dame Center, overlooking the old city, right on the old city gates that trace their roots back to the first century. And you could just hear all of the bustle and the noise. And you walk the streets down in the places where we're inside the old city, these small, small walkways, claustrophobic at times, people and vendors selling things left and right. One person looked at me and says, "Please come into my shop and I will rip you off." And I thought, no, I don't want that. And wanting you to buy their stuff, and just the hustle and the bustle and the money changing and the chaos in the midst of what was happening. And our leader gathered us together in a room overlooking the city, and he said, "Listen, I want to prepare you for the next few days because it's not going to be like it was. It's going to be a hectic day. We're going to be doing a lot of sights, a lot going in and out of you, and you need to be prepared for what you're going to see. And it's time to take it seriously. It's time to step this up. The vacation on the Sea of Galilee is over. Now we're talking about the really serious texts." And it was. The next few days were a whirlwind of activity. We never got to see all the things we wanted to see in as much depth as we had hoped. We were dashing from site to site, trying to make schedules, also trying to deal with the traffic and the flow in the city, and so much going on. We were just so exhausted in the evening, saying, "This is going by so fast." So this is exactly the way it's supposed to be. You have this relaxed Galilean adventure of Jesus for 3 years. He comes into the city. He makes his way for a few days. He gets into the city, and it's a week. And if you were the disciples walking with Jesus during that intense time, you would have the very same thought, saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, this is all going down so fast, quickly. Things are happening." We go from this moment of great acceptance of Jesus and Palm Sunday, coming into the city, being heralded as the King of the Jews, only to have his closest disciple betray him on a Thursday, rest later that evening, convicted in a few hours' time after that, early in the morning, and put to death. I mean, hours. And it happens so fast. And the great text that kind of leads to this is a text from Luke 9, verse 51. After this Galilean ministry, he says, "And Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem." Leaving everything behind. I mean, worldly kind of success, again, he had a big church. 5, maybe 10,000 people following wherever he went, listening to his words. People were hoping that he was going to deliver on some things they had hoped he'd deliver on. And yet Jesus takes his disciples along. He sets his face to Jerusalem. And on the third passion prediction in the Gospel of Mark, he says, on the way to Jerusalem, Jesus said to his disciples a third time that the Son of Man must be killed and rise again on the third day. A time to give your life. A time to let everything else go. Jesus putting it all away, putting all expectations people had of him to the side, and doing the one thing, which was to fill the will of the Father. "I came not to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many." And I see in that rhythm, another rhythm for our lives. If the danger of the busyness is never taking time to recharge and to rest, there's also a danger of wanting to just hang out in Galilee, right? We like Galilee. It has a lake there. It has things that we need there. It's a slower pace of life. It is an opportunity for us to be leisurely, but we can still know that we're doing a number of good things. We're spending our days walking around trying to help people. And Jesus says, no, I'm setting my face to Jerusalem to do something more than just that. I didn't come just to have a crowd. I didn't come just to heal. I didn't come just to show people that things can be better if they pay attention to what the Lord has in store. I came to give my life, to lay it down. And in that giving, that laying down of their lives, we see the heart of the Jesus way. Jesus says the same thing applies to us as followers of him. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. And all of the pastors at the end of this trip, we said, we want to go back to Galilee. It was just a great time. This is just too heavy and stressful. And we said, that's the point. Jesus isn't going to let us stay there. We are meant to move on into Jerusalem. And the challenge in that would be, for you, are you content to stay on the Sea of Galilee? Just listening to beautiful and maybe even challenging words from the Lord, which they are. Maybe knowing that he's going to pay attention to our physical needs. Maybe hoping that he's going to set some things right in our society that we think needs to be changed. It's all going down the bad road. Back then they thought the same thing. Today we think the same thing as well. But to really follow Jesus is to set your face towards something for which you're willing to lay down your life, for which you're willing to let everything go, for which you are saying to him, I'm going to leave it all behind and take you where you lead me so that I can follow you all the way. Lay down my life. Have you set your face towards following Jesus on the road to Jerusalem? Are you willing to take up that challenge? In closing, my wife and I were talking about the effect of the trip on me, and I'm still processing this, and she asked me if I had been transformed by this, and I said, I don't think so. I've learned a lot. I've been challenged by a lot. I'm glad that I went, but I didn't have some kind of amazing experience, and she was surprised to hear that, and I said, I'm kind of surprised to hear myself say that as well. Then I had to sort through why I meant that. You know, you can say what you're feeling and not know why you said it. And the more I thought about it, I eventually said to her, the reason I don't feel completely transformed by this experience is that I don't think that the life-transforming experiences that we have are experiences where we are being filled up. I don't think the life-transforming experiences of our walk with the Lord are those times in which we are receiving. We are receiving, we are receiving. I'm just going around the countryside in Israel, taking in the sights. I'm paying attention to what's happening. I have a lot of reflections on what's happening there now. I'm sorting through that. But I wasn't participating in anything. I was receiving. I said, there's no way that something like that can transform me in a way that going to Guatemala to serve did. Or talking with someone in my office when their family is falling apart. Or going down to the Salvation Army and helping our deacons serve those who are in need. Or talking to someone who has completely lost hope in God and says, I don't believe in him anymore. The life-transforming moments that we have on the way with Jesus are those in which we give because we have received. If our walk with the Lord is, Lord, help me just to take it all in. Give me more, give me more, give me more, give me more. We will never mature on the way. We will never enter into that exciting territory of what it means to think not about what's in it for me, but the joy that I have that Jesus had when he says, well, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. When we are invited to follow Jesus on the way, we are invited into a depth that can only be experienced when we also come to the point which we say, I no longer exist to be served, but to serve. I no longer exist to be filled up, but to help others who are in need to fill them up. I no longer exist simply to be kind of an arbiter of the quality of my own existence, but rather to simply give whenever I'm called to give. Because the Lord gave me all that I ever need by laying down his life for me. That's the depth of what it means to follow Jesus on the way. Let's pray.